If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast. This is episode number 67. It's Thursday, November 20th, and today was the deadline for teams to set their 40-man rosters before next month's Rule 5 draft. So we'll be talking about the non-news on who the Red Sox protected today. Also, we'll talk about saying goodbye to Alex Hassan and saying hello to Juan Francisco, and what to make of those two other roster moves this week. Plus, of course, we'll, as always, get to your emails. We've got some good emails about Cuban prospect / future stud Yoan Moncada, as well as one of the players who was left unprotected today. Not that we expected him to be protected, but about a player who's been in the system for a little bit and what he is at this stage of his career. Coming to you from Sox Prospect South here in our nation's capital, my name's Chris Hatfield. Thank you for joining us. I'm joined today from Westboro, Massachusetts by SoxProspects.com managing editor Matthew Heagle. Hello, Matt. How are things up in New England?
Great. Excited to blast this quick one out, do a little reacting and answer some questions. And just the two of us today, but hey, should be a good one.
Just the two of us. It's like Will and Jaden Smith, except now he's he's got Willow too, so I guess that doesn't... It's not just the two of them anymore. Will Smith, you're a liar.
Not quite. We got to get Ian back in for that one.
Yeah. I could see Ian doing... I whip my hair back and forth. Never mind. We're getting off topic. Again, we want to thank you guys for downloading. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. That's at SoxProspects.com. Sorry, at SoxProspects, not .com. Just at SoxProspects. You can follow Matt. Tell the people where to follow you, Matt.
At Matt Heagle, S-P, MattHueegle, S-P.
Excellent. And you can follow me at S-P Chris Hatfield, CHRISHATFIELD. It's a little more generic of a spelling. And also, if you're listening to this, you can subscribe on iTunes. If you do, make sure you rate and review us. It really helps a lot. As well as we are now officially on Stitcher. So if you're someone who likes to use Stitcher, you can find us on there. Search for us. You can subscribe. And rate and review us there as well. So, for those of you who want to listen that way, fire away. But without further ado, Matt, let's get into it. Today was the deadline for teams to set their reserve lists in preparation for the Rule 5 draft. 90% of what people know that to mean is to add players to the 40-man roster to protect them from the being selected in the Major League portion of the Rule 5 draft next month in December. The Red Sox did as they were expected to do. They protected four players: catcher Blake Swihart, left-handed pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez, first baseman Travis Shaw, and second baseman Sean Coyle. Although I guess you could say second/third baseman Sean Coyle. But those four players being protected was pretty much not a surprise, Matt. Were you expecting anything less today?
No, not at all. I mean, I think you nailed it on the head with your story. I think was it this morning, I guess, with the predictions, and basically, you know, you put Travis Shaw and Coyle in the not certain but likely, which I agree with, and they both got protected. I know we had some conversation about Coyle's down short season in the AFL, or you know, he struck out a ton while he was in Arizona. So I don't know. There's some question there, maybe, but. You know, better safe than sorry with a guy like that. You know, it's a pretty good prospect. So, no surprises for me.
I was actually, it's funny, a coincidence today. I was talking with a scout who was in Arizona who actually really liked Coyle, what he saw from him. So sometimes you got to look beyond the stats a little bit. But that was kind of interesting that he did like what he saw out of him. But no surprises there that those guys were protected. I think we've more or less covered those players in terms of what they bring to the table, plenty. But the other thing we wanted to mention is who was left unprotected for selection in the Major League portion of the Rule 5 draft. That's also in my preview that's up on Sox Prospects. I think technically it published before midnight. No, it was just after midnight on the 20th, so technically today. It was a late night, what can I tell you? I think Henry Ramos is an intriguing guy. He is an outfielder, spent the season that he was healthy for in Portland, but I think he may have been a much more likely guy to be added to the 40-man roster had he not suffered a stress fracture in his tibia in May. So he's now healthy. He's now playing in Puerto Rico. He's definitely a little rusty. He's hitting like 170 right now, I think, in just over 50 at-bats. But, you know, very athletic. He was doing some really good things at the plate when he got hurt. And I think had he been healthy the whole year, I think he would have had to have been protected. But as it is, the Red Sox maybe catch a little bit of a, pun not intended, catch a little bit of a break with Ramos getting hurt in May. So that's one less guy they're probably going to have to protect because he's probably going to be so rusty. I can't see him staying in the majors all year. I don't know what you think on that, Matt, and maybe if there's anybody else in particular who really sticks out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not huge on Ramos. I don't think he could possibly get selected, but I don't think he has a chance to stick, really. I think I'm more looking at the bullpen guys. As those are usually the guys that you can sneak on, like a bad team, maybe keep stashed in the back of your bullpen. The guy I'm looking at is Aaron Kurtz in particular. He came over actually as compensation for Theo Epstein, part of that deal. And he's coming back from Tommy John last year. He missed all 2013. And, you know, that was his second season in Portland. He was also there in 2012. And he's now 24. And he put up good numbers last year. And, you know, fully back from Tommy John, maybe he could take another sort of step forward next year and potentially, you know, maybe, you know, his stuff comes back a little more, control comes back a little more. And, you know, I could see him sticking maybe in a major league bullpen more than any of the other guys, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, the velocity reports out of Arizona had Kurtz sitting in the low to mid-90s with the fastball, which is, you know, about where he should be. A couple other guys I think are in similar situations are Miguel Celestino, who was a minor league free agent but has already re-signed with the Red Sox, who finished the year in AAA even. But it's kind of a situation where it's good stuff. He just doesn't know where it's going. It's the type of
stuff. I believe he was Rule 5 eligible last year too, right?
Yeah, and he didn't get selected.
Situation.
Yeah. he strikes me, or him last year is kind of how I see Kurtz this year, as kind of a fringy, yeah, maybe, but is he worth the pick also type guy? This year, you know, he had some good results, but I think it's also just, is he even above replacement level? And do you want to use a Rule 5 pick on a guy that's going to be replacement level, you know? Or hey, maybe it's worth the flyer. Maybe it's worth it to see if you can get him in there and dial up the fastball a little bit or something. It kind of depends on what the scouts see, honestly. I know when Ryan Pressly got drafted 2 years ago, the scouts that our guys had talked to really liked him. They thought that, hey, you know, if we tweak this one thing, that's a major league pitcher right there, and that's kind of what wound up happening with him. So it's often things that you don't see as a casual fan in the stats, or, you know, even if you see the person live, it's kind of an advanced baseball thing.
Yeah, that Ryan Pressly one kind of came out of nowhere, at least for me, and because I think he spent most of the year in high A, or all the year before he was selected in high A, and they put him in the bullpen and it sort of took off. I don't think he had such a good season last year, but his season in Minnesota was really good.
I think he had spent at least part of the year in Portland.
I think he was promoted like midseason.
He was. Yeah. He in high A that year had thrown 76 innings, starting 12 of 20 games. But that was when he had gotten moved to the bullpen, and when he moved to the bullpen, he moved up to Portland for his last 14 appearances. And he was, it's funny, the strikeout numbers weren't even that good. But he then went to the Arizona Fall League, and in 14 innings, he struck out, I just have the rate stats here. But, oh no, here we go. In 14 innings in the Arizona Fall League, he struck out, 18 guys, and only walked one. So that was when, you know, a little bit of a head turner right there. So nothing really out of the Arizona Fall League like that this year.
That's a little makes me think of Luis Diaz maybe as a possibility. Sort of mm-hmm. similar. I think Diaz is even maybe a little bit better of a prospect than Presley was at the time. But yeah. this guy has had some success in the rotation. But maybe if you put him in the bullpen, he could just come out gangbusters and sort of fill that role in the majors.
Yeah, I think
I'm not sure exactly how his stuff projects into the bullpen, but could be interesting.
Yeah, he's a guy who kind of off the radar in Greenville and Salem had an uptick in his stuff and hasn't really had overwhelming numbers necessarily, even especially this year when he got to Portland. So it might be a situation. This is his second time being eligible for Rule 5 as well. I think that might be a situation where the Red Sox just know maybe he's a candidate to be selected, but just it was like Alex Speer said when we had him on two episodes ago, if a guy projects to be a bullpen arm, and he's that far away, is it worth using the 40-man spot to protect him, even though you might lose him? You know, even though everyone was up in arms about losing Josh Fields and Ryan Presley, what did they really lose there? You know, was the 40-man roster space more useful?
Right. If they project like to be a closer setup type guy to really want to protect a reliever, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look what happened with Drake Britton. The Red Sox protected him mm-hmm. when he was basically in high A, and he wound up, using up all of his options, and now he was kind of not an albatross on the 40-man roster, but he was taking up a useful spot that, to be the pitcher he projects as right now, was that worth it? Don't know.
And it might just end up hurting him, his career, because, he can't get options, so
right.
they have to move on, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Some other guys who are available that are probably worth mentioning, Keith Couch, who is in Portland for second year this year. He's due to be moved up to Pawtucket this year. He's a guy for whom the move to the bullpen has been something in the offing for a couple years now, but they keep needing him in the rotation. I can't see them needing him in the rotation this year, especially if he's in Pawtucket. There's no room for the guys who project to be major league starters in Pawtucket to start. Never mind the guys who project to be major league relievers at best. So it's going to be intriguing to see what happens if he moves to the bullpen this year. Not overwhelming stuff, but has gotten results. Robbie Scott, who we went over extensively last week, is also available. Given the stuff and the reverse splits that we discussed, I can't see him getting selected, but he's another guy who's gotten results. And we also mentioned Jason Garcia last week, guy who's hitting 100, but he's only been as high as Greenville. Is he too far away?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Again, you could try to stick him in the bullpen, see what happens, but I mean, for that far away, it seems a little improbable, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And then a couple other guys I just threw in at the end are Jonathan Aro and Jacob Dahlstrand, who were on the Salem roster last year, have pretty good stuff. It's not necessarily lights-out stuff. And outfielder Kiery De La Cruz, who I think went from being a potential 40-man protected guy about a year and a half ago to free-swinging his way completely out of the conversation. He's also been dinged up by injury a little bit as well. He didn't really put up great numbers this year in Portland when he was healthy, and he didn't get activated until I think about a month and a half in, right? So yeah, he hit .295 this year, which is good, with 7 home runs in 70 games. But he also struck out 55 times in 70 games in 258 at-bats.
I remember Ian just really commenting on how he doesn't get cheated at all on his swing. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that he really didn't show the power this year that you need to go along with that approach. So unless his power upticks, and he's not a huge guy either, but he's really thick, but he's not that, he's not overly tall or
right.
huge. So, I think he'll definitely need to show power numbers to get away with that approach.
Yeah, it's just he's the type of guy that doesn't really have a major league approach at this stage of the game. So you can't really see a team taking him in Rule 5. You know, this isn't a player like a Hassan, who we'll talk about when he was added to the major league roster or to the 40-man roster in a little bit. You can at least see, okay, well, it's a guy with a major league approach at the plate at the very least. If you think everything else is going to come along, you could see a team taking a flyer. But if Kiery De La Cruz were in the majors this year, he'd strike out about 250 times, I feel like. Like, major league pitching would probably just carve him up. So those are really the the potential suspects to be selected. As far as the Red Sox themselves picking anybody, I said in my preview, I don't see it happening, even though they're going to pick what? They're going to pick sixth, right? Because they're the seventh pick in the entry draft, but that's because the Astros have the number two pick. So,
Right.
I think that would make them the sixth pick in the Rule 5 draft. It's possible, but I think it's more likely we see them do what they've done the past couple of years in selecting a player for another team and trading them for a useful piece. I guess not the last 2 years, but in 2012 and 2013. Yeah, so that's the last 2 years. They selected Jeff Coburnus in 2012 and traded him to Detroit for Justin Henry, who spent the last 2 years in Pawtucket. And in 2013, they selected Marwin Gonzalez and traded him to the Astros for Marco Duarte, who I think that was 2011, come to think of it, and I wrote that wrong. Yeah, that was 2011. That's about the third typo I found in that stupid preview. Anyway, in 2011 they did that, and Duarte spent a couple of years in the Red Sox system with okay results, and he spent 2013 pitching in Mexico, and he became a free agent in 2013. I don't think he signed with anybody. I think he just kept pitching in Mexico. So, yeah, don't expect too much on Rule 5 Day is the moral of the story. All right, well, that brings us to our next segment of other moves that happened this week. The first one is a player who had been with the system for a while and is now gone. Alex Hassan was claimed off waivers by the Oakland Athletics on Monday. And interestingly enough, the A's then tried to put him through waivers themselves, and Hassan was claimed by the Baltimore Orioles today. So he's kind of on the J.D. Durbin, Sandy Rosario transaction carousel right now. Where he winds up, nobody knows.
Nice one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, those were both mentioned on the Sox Prospects Forum today, so I will not take credit for thinking of those on my own. I would have thought of Sandy Rosario on my own, but Durbin was a guy I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, I remember them, but just not until I didn't remember the name until you mentioned it.
Yeah. So anyways, Hassan was drafted by the Red Sox in 2009 in the 20th round. Interestingly, this is something not a lot of people remember. He was drafted as a pitcher. But then when he went to the Cape Cod League, which was before the signing deadline was in July, there were still draft and follows where you would follow a guy over the course of the summer, and the signing deadline was in August. And the Red Sox followed him on the Cape and decided they liked him better as an outfielder after seeing him extensively in the Cape Cod League. So he was signed as an outfielder after being announced as a pitcher. He played both ways in college at Duke. And he entered the system, went to Lowell, and, you know, the standard sort of college signee stat line, 333, 382, 441, got a cup of coffee in Greenville that year. And then in 2010, got bumped all the way up to Salem at age 22, where he put up an on-base percentage of .397 and slugged .456, more doubles power than home run power in 100 games. He hit 28 doubles, 104 games, he hit 28 doubles. You know, showed a good stat line, showed what you want to see out of a guy who's coming out of college and going straight to Salem, playing in the ACC. He was a local guy as well, I should mention. He's from Quincy. I think he was born in Quincy, but he grew up in Milton, and he went to Boston College High School. Mm-hmm. So that was his 2010 year, kind of put him on the map. In 2011, he went to Portland, and that's where he first kind of got the knock on him that he's got a great approach, but the bat speed really wasn't all that impressive. He hit .291, again, put it up an on-base percentage of .404, but the power just wasn't really there. He hit 13 home runs, but he basically had, I think if I remember this correctly, he had a couple of stretches where he hit for a little bit of power, but for most of the season, he was just on a power outage. Our scouts who saw him just said the bat speed was very slow. Wasn't really a guy that was going to hit for a lot of power. He went to the Arizona Fall League in 2011 and put up okay numbers. In 2012, he was promoted to Pawtucket, but early in the season got hurt and missed a good chunk of the year. He wound up going down to Greenville on rehab. And when he came back, again, the numbers weren't too great. But last year, he kind of came back onto the scene a little bit. He made an adjustment to his swing, and he hit for a lot more power. In 2013 in Pawtucket, in only 55 games, he was hurt last year as well. But in 55 games, he had 321, 431, 460. He was one of the better offensive players in the system. He would have led all of minor league baseball in on-base percentage had he qualified, but he only played in 55 games. So he, I'm sorry. I misspoke. 2012, he was healthy. He wasn't hitting for any power. 2013 was the year he got hurt and rehabbed, came up through Greenville.
It was before 2013 that he got added to the...
Yeah, so he entering 2013, I had alluded to this earlier, he was protected from Rule 5 in the first year he was eligible. Now, keep in mind, in 2012 in AAA, yes, he had made it to AAA, but in 94 games, 312 at-bats, he hit 256, 377, 365. And to me, this is a super arbitrary sort of thing, but when you see the on-base percentage higher than the slugging, that's always, to me, a very bad sign. Again, completely arbitrary. I'm not saying if he had slugged 378, there's no longer a cause for concern, but it's kind of the red flag number right there. He just really wasn't getting anything on the ball. So I know I can, at least speaking for myself, I was surprised. I know I both privately and publicly poo-pooed the move of protecting him from Rule 5, not necessarily because I didn't think he was a useful player or ever had a chance of becoming a major leaguer, but because was this a guy that was going to get selected in Rule 5? I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, he never really seemed to have a huge upside. I mean, he had a great approach, and he looks maybe like a fourth outfielder at best type of guy. So, it was a weird move because he's the type of guy that even if selected, you know, I don't know. We never had him ranked that highly. I think that sort of raised our eyebrows and maybe made us look at him a little closer, but it was definitely most people who follow the system thought it was a pretty odd move.
And I think part of it too was it just seemed that offseason the Red Sox were focusing on base percentage for whatever reason, because that was the same offseason they went and got, you know, I think it was Victorino that offseason, right? Because that was the offseason before 2013. You know, they were making moves that seemed that they might be focusing on that as a way to build a lineup. But, you know, it still seems strange. At any rate, he then goes out in 2013 and tears the cover off the ball and makes me and whoever else disagreed look like an idiot. You know, went and like I said, he would have led the minors in on-base percentage had he been healthy. But that said, he came back this year and the numbers were good. You know, 287, 378, 426, final line. But as we went over in our top 40 in review, the first half of the season, he was kind of rudderless, wasn't hitting that great. Mid-season, he got a super brief call-up to the majors, played in, I think, one game. The Red Sox were just hurting, so he got a brief call-up. And when he went back down, he hit a lot better after that time. So it was, you know, a different hitter in the second half of the season. But then, surprisingly, after the Pawtucket's playoff run ended, he was the only healthy member of the 40-man roster that didn't get a September call-up. The only other player, the active roster was at 38. The only other player that didn't get called up was Jonathan Herrera, but he had, I think, bone spurs in his elbow or something. He had an elbow injury that he wasn't even with the team anymore. He was back home. So it was surprising, and it kind of spoke volumes. Even if it was a situation of, well, there just aren't at-bats for him, and it's like, well, you can't make at-bats for him, you know? I know you've
Or just have, even though there's too many players, just have him there.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, by the end of the year, Ortiz wasn't playing, Pedroia wasn't playing, Brock Holt wasn't playing because they were all hurt.
You seem more interested in seeing Brents at the time, interestingly.
Yeah, they wanted to, I get that you want to see Brents, you want to see Betts, you want to get Jackie Bradley a little bit of playing time, and you want to see Rusne Castillo, but, you know, you really can't squeeze out a few at-bats for Hassan. I just found it odd.
Right. Yeah, anyway. I'm just looking at it, too. He was actually up on August 20th. He got in the game. So
that's right. Okay.
Maybe it has something to do with that, too, that he was just up, but I don't know. Just thinking about it now, it's sort of like that kind of foreshadowed what happened this offseason with waving him.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. So this offseason, earlier in the week, the Red Sox were clearing some room on the 40-man, apparently, and tried to pass Hassan through waivers. I don't think they were trying to get rid of him. I think they obviously would have outrighted him to Pawtucket because they still could. To clarify that a little bit, if a player has not been in the minor leagues for seven seasons, he can be outrighted once without his permission when he's removed from the roster. So you would designate the player for assignment, he would clear waivers, and you would then outright him to the minor leagues. I bring that up because that's the reason we've come to suspect why some other players may not have been candidates to be removed from the roster. For example, Ryan LaVarnway, Drake Britton, and Jamile Weeks are three guys who have come up in on Twitter, on the forums, as, well, why were these guys not maybe removed from the roster? And I think the answer is that those players have been in the minor leagues for seven seasons. And if they were put on to clear waivers and be outrighted, they could instead choose to become free agents. I believe that's why Jonathan Herrera became a free agent when he was when he cleared waivers and was outrighted after the season ended. So I think, to me, Matt, and tell me if you think this makes sense, I think it was just the Red Sox trying to get a little sneaky earlier in the week and try and clear Hassan through waivers when teams may not have been paying attention. Is that kind of your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no reason they wouldn't have wanted to keep him, as far as we know. So yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, they obviously have a lot of outfielders, so, and they, you know, to waive him in the first place, you have to be prepared to lose him. So, you know, it's, they obviously weighed that into it and weren't overly concerned about losing him. I think his stock has fallen for them since he's on the 40 man. So, you know, so he's a guy they probably were not afraid to lose over some of these other guys, but also exactly what you said makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. You don't see guys at one point, the high point of Alex Hassan's career, minor league career with the Red Sox in terms of Sox prospects ranking, I didn't realize he'd gotten all the way up to 13. But apparently ranked 13th in the system at one point in on June 23rd, 2011. Shout out to Dick Duggan for his
2011. That must have been a weak time because he wasn't even that highly thought of at the time.
No, I think would that have been when like Will Middlebrooks was the best prospect in the system?
Yeah, probably.
Because
yeah,
that was when Drake Britton was number four around then in 2011. Some other guys were high at that point. Alex Wilson was a top 10 prospect in 2011. He was ninth in the system.
So, they traded for Gonzalez before that year, right? So they emptied out some of their top prospects.
That makes sense. Yeah. So it was you know, a thin system at that point. But still, it's a top 15 prospect.
I remember, you know, I think coming into this season, he was around 20 in that area.
Yeah.
So.
He was a top 20 prospect. I think he was like 19, 18 at points recently. It's too bad to lose a player like that. It's still an asset. But in the long run, I don't know that I see this as necessarily terrible. I know everyone was saying, oh, he's going to go to Oakland. Billy Beane's going to put him in some platoon, and he's going to hit like 300, 400, 500 in that platoon. He's going to be the next Brandon Moss. I don't know if that's necessarily true, and I want to see what happens with him with the O's.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I don't know. I've seen a lot of him, and he just doesn't wow you. I mean, you know, he has good approach, obviously, and professional at bats, but he's just not the type of player who's really going to burn you or become a star, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that said, having spoken to him, and I think you probably have at some point too, super nice guy. In my dealings with him. And I know we wish him the best of luck with Baltimore or wherever it is that he winds up.
Right. could be a long off season for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, as for those who came in, Juan Francisco was claimed off waivers by the Red Sox earlier this week from Toronto. He's been around a little bit. He was originally signed to the Reds organization, I believe as an international free agent. He debuted in 2006 in rookie ball with the Reds, worked his way up through the Reds system to AAA, and debuted with the Reds in 2009 before eventually he was traded to the Braves before the 2012 season. At that point, he was out of options, so that was a big reason why he kind of bounced between AAA and the majors before then. He spent all of 2012 with the Braves, and in 2013, he, during the season, was traded from the Braves to the Brewers, and he spent 2014 with the Jays bouncing between their AAA and Major League rosters. I believe he must have signed a minor league free agent deal and then was called up later in the year. Juan Francisco, Matt, what are your thoughts on him? How does he fit?
Well, he's got a lot of power, and he strikes out a lot. So, I mean, that's a basic profile right there.
Willie Mo, you know, Francisco.
Right, exactly. He batted .220 last year, but .291 OBP. So, you know, under .300 OBP is never a good sight. But he had 16 home runs in 287 at bats. So, you know, big time power, which I think, you know, obviously is rare in the game today. And I'm sure that one of the main things they were drawn to, the Red Sox were drawn to. They have right-handed hitters right now at first. Third, depend, you know, well, it's Middlebrooks, is, you know, right-handed. I don't know if how he factors in at all into next season, but, you know, kind of something they're lacking in right, left-handed power. So I could see him as fighting for a platoon spot, maybe a Mike Karp type. I don't know. Like, if he can work himself into that role where he's good at pinch hitting coming off the bench, then I think he could be valuable, but you know, the strikeouts, and he's never really put together a full major league season. So it's not something to get too excited about, but the power does jump off the page. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. There's something there at least.
Yeah. And it's not like he has historically mashed righties or anything for his career. He's a .248, .310, .476 hitter. So I guess there's power there. 47 home runs against right-handers in 858 at bats. So, you know, the slugging, there's that over 200 ISO, which shows you there's some power there at the very least. That's it. He gets destroyed by lefties. He's hitting .159 against them for his career. And in 2014, we'll look at this, pull their splits up real quick, see if maybe he'd be the left-handed side of a platoon. Not a whole lot better. He hit .238, but he slugged .504. So again, there's that power. But again, that's only a .306 on base. You'll maybe take that with that kind of power, but again, left-handers, 116, 204, 186. So he's not a guy who's playing for you every day. That's for certain. He's a guy who is the left-handed side of a platoon. It strikes me as maybe a bench bat, or like you said, or maybe the worst-case scenario. We've heard that the Red Sox are basically going in hard to try and sign Pablo Sandoval. Speaking of platoons, and you know, he. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Francisco is kind of the plan D in that situation. If Sandoval or Chase Headley doesn't come in, you know, you platoon him with Middlebrooks or something. But that said, I've pulled up his career as a pinch hitter, 132 plate appearances, 178, 265, 305.
Yeah, that's not what you want to see.
Yeah.
But,
so
yeah, just another guy at a spot where they're weak. So, you know, just something to throw in the mix.
Yeah.
And with sticks, I guess.
It's an asset that they had room for. Why not?
You might be about to say this, but he could also get non-tendered, which we were going to discuss. Andrew Miller comes to mind. That's who they did that with.
Right?
They traded for him from the Marlins and non-tendered him and were able to sign him back at, you know, sort of a low point in his career when he was still trying to be a starter. So it's just a way to get to know a guy and then try to get him for less money potentially.
I'd forgotten about that. Good call on Miller. I was trying to remember because I know they'd done that before. So what non-tendering means is when a player is essentially when they're arbitration eligible, you choose whether or not to tender them a contract, and you grab that deadline. That's December 2nd is kind of the next roster deadline this offseason. The Red Sox will decide whether or not to tender contracts to their arbitration eligible players. Generally, non-tender candidates are guys who are in their second or third or maybe fourth if they were a Super 2 year of arbitration eligibility. Francisco will be arbitration eligible. He did sign a minor league free agent deal last offseason with Toronto. He'll be arbitration eligible. It'll be interesting to see if they maybe non-tender him and perhaps try and re-sign him to maybe a minor league deal and stash him in Pawtucket, or, you know, maybe do that with an opt-out because we know they've done that with plenty of guys. That said, I think that kind of maybe hinges a little bit on the Garrett Cicchini to the outfield experiment becoming a thing full time, because it's not like it's not like you have a gaping hole at third base in Pawtucket otherwise.
MLB trade rumors predicted him at $2.2 million in arbitrations next year, so you know it's a decent chunk of change for someone who's competing for a spot. So I can see why they wouldn't want to pay that.
Yeah, I definitely could as well. I really can't see them paying that for him. You know, he's a guy with, I mean, he does have 1,000 career plate appearances in the majors, which is not nothing, but most of those in the National League.
I think if they do pay that, that'll definitely say something. And
yes,
we'll probably have another discussion about how much they like him and why that is.
Right. Right. Also, one public service announcement before we move on from Juan Francisco. Googling him from work, not a good idea. Apparently, there's a photographer named Juan Francisco who does like very artsy nude photography. So don't Google him from work and go directly into a Google image search. So PSA for all of you out there who might be not paying attention to work. Not that that's not what I do. That was from home.
Never a good idea to Google anything and go directly to the images at work, I would say.
Good call, man. Good call. So I guess we'll close this out with some reader questions. I always love getting those. Again, you can send your reader questions to podcast@soxprospects.com. That's podcast@soxprospects.com. They go to me if you want to throw a name on there. You know, hey, stupid, or hey, you know, hey, guys, whatever you want to put. But we got a couple that we wanted to hit on this week, so might as well do those. Our first question comes to us from Brian Barkwill, and Brian goes, hey, guys, I had a question on Yoan Moncada. It appears he is the next big fish in the amateur player pool. I was wondering, one, what you guys knew slash thought of his overall skill set. Two, knew what allows a player like Rusne Castillo to be considered a, quote, professional on the CBA, but Moncada is still an amateur. And three, I read reports his amateur bonus could be in the $30 million range. This is true. Well, beyond the amateur pool cap, what effect would this have on the Red Sox should they sign him for this amount? And does the timing of his signing matter, given that we already exceeded the cap this year? Thanks again, guys. Lots of good stuff. He's stuck in New York, apparently. Sorry, Brian. But yeah, sincerely, Brian. So, for those who don't know, Yoan Moncada, 19-year-old Dominican defector who was declared a free agent by Major League Baseball last Saturday but is still waiting for U.S. government approval by the Office of Foreign Assets Commission, I think? It's the OFAC. Okay. Yeah, it's the OFAC. I know that much. Definitely, yeah, the next big fish is true. Just to answer these questions, first off, we'll take the second one. The difference between a player like Rusne Castillo and Moncada is that Moncada is 19. The age threshold for being considered a professional is 23. So that's the easy answer to that question. Rusne Castillo is older, as is Yasmani Tomas. That's his first name, right? Yasmani. But yeah, Tomas is also a professional because he is older than 23. So, Matt, I know that we had both done some research on Moncada in preparation for talking about him on the podcast. What have you found out about Yoan Moncada?
Yeah, he's a really, really exciting player. I would say kind of five-tool all-around type athlete for sure. Jonathan Mayo, who talked to multiple scouts, who he put a 60 on his hit tool, 60 power, 70 speed, 60 arm, 50 fielding. So, you know, 50 is average. Oh, great speed, above average power, above average hit, above average arm. So, you know, nothing really not to like there. All kinds of accolades in the Cuban leagues. One thing I found interesting, this is from a Ben Badler report, is that he, at one of the Cuban All-Star games, they actually have a skills competition where they race from first all around the bases, and he actually won both races, beating Castillo, Rusne Castillo, who's a 70 runner who, you know, we've seen fly, and Guillermo Herrera he also beat, who I'm not familiar with, but, you know, so he's a speedster, got some power, hit, all-around tools. He's played mostly second base. They say, reports are that he can pretty much play anywhere in the infield except shortstop, so second, third base, you know, obviously the Red Sox might be looking for him. Looking at him for third base, and he also played center field. So I don't know, you know, they're pretty stacked in the outfield, but it's an option at least, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, at age 19, it's not like he would be going directly to the majors anyway. So You would think they probably develop him at his best position and take it from there. I think the comparable would be Jorge Soler, of the Cubs, who was also signed very young out of Cuba, and he took a few years in the minors to get up to the majors with the Cubs, so before he debuted this year. Moncada, again, the $30 million figure, it seems like $30 to $40 million is the projection for him. It's been tossed around, at least.
Yeah, and that's what I'm seeing.
That number alone, let's put it this way, the Red Sox had, what, a $1.8 million cap this year or something to that effect. So whoever signs him, they are going over their international signing bonus cap. No team in baseball will not want to do that. But as discussed by people like Ben Badler and Kylie McDaniel, who's now at Fangraphs, it's interesting that the teams that have already gone over their signing caps this year are probably the favorites to land him, not just because they've already committed to paying overage on their signing bonuses for this year and have already planned not to sign anyone for the next couple of years in that sense, but because, you know, other teams would be going over their bonuses immediately too. But the problem is that these the July 2nd signing period is when 16-year-olds can sign with major league teams. These teams don't call guys for the first time on July 2nd. You know, they've set deals with these guys 9 to 12 months in advance, and that's why everybody just gets announced on July 2nd. Well, that being the case, if a team has already committed to signing players and going over their cap next year, the problem where if they went over their cap this year is that they wouldn't be allowed to sign any players for the next 2 years for more than $300,000, which is the situation the Red Sox find themselves in, as do the, I think it's the Yankees, the Rays, and who is the other team? The Angels, I believe, were the four teams that went over this year. The Yankees went way over. I think they signed like half of the Baseball America top 30 international prospects or something silly. So those teams are kind of favorites to sign him. I know Badler also listed eight teams. He listed the Nationals, Giants, Tigers, Rays, Angels, Braves, Red Sox, and Yankees as the eight sort of favorites. I think I've seen that the Yankees might be the front runners on that, but I think that's just more kind of they're the Yankees type deal.
Yeah, and how hard they've gone after international guys this this period, and seems like that's a focus for them, sinking money in that area.
Yeah, I don't think it's any sort of inside information or anything like that. He's an interesting player. To me, if I'm the Red Sox, I am not letting myself get outbid for him. You know, there's no reason not to. It's kind of the it's just money situation at this point. You're already, you know, over the cap for this year. You're already not going to be able to sign guys for the next 2 years for more than $300,000. You've got the resources to go do it. Why not add them to the system? It's another tool. It's another asset. Hey, maybe the infield's starting to get a little bit crowded in the lower minors with Rafael Devers and Michael Chavis, but I don't see any reason why they wouldn't go in hard after Moncada.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, on the other hand, I could say the same thing about the Yankees. I don't see why, you know, why they would themselves get outbid. So it very well could come down to a sort of a classic Red Sox Yankees battle over a free agent.
Well, also the $30 million, it's worth noting, would, I believe, be by far the highest bonus given to an international free agent, and that's in terms of bonus. You know, these other guys like Puig and Castillo got major league deals, and so, like, you know, with Castillo, the $72 million he got was his actual salary and everything like that. With Moncada, you can't give him a major league deal, I don't think. So all of the money you're giving him is in his signing bonus. So this is the first time that would just be a complete signing bonus situation in terms of that amount of money. So it'll be. I'm intrigued to see how high the bidding goes. You know, sometimes these things get over-speculated, sometimes they get, you know, under-speculated. And in the meantime, Tomas is going to sign with the team and likely sign for more than Castillo did and set a new record for a Cuban player. So these salaries for Cuban guys keep going up and up and up. We don't know how long it's going to take him to get cleared by the government, but the speculation is that, you know, it'll be highly unlikely that he does not get cleared before next July 2nd. The other possibility that McDaniel brought up is that maybe a team convinces him to wait until July 2nd to sign him so that they can put him on their next year's salary cap for international signings. But I have a hard time seeing him agreeing to that, especially with, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox being players at this point. It's not like there aren't any big fish on the market for him.
Right, yeah, because you take the Yankees and Red Sox out if you wait till then, because and they can't even get in the bidding war.
Right.
So that, that would definitely be questionable. The other thing I was going to say was that, you know, we sort of questioned why this year they decided to go over that limit. It didn't seem like they got as big a haul as you'd want due to how much they spent this year. So, you know, no, this is the big fish that we thought that a year like this would, where they go over that cap, would make the most sense. All the reason to go for and really make this year count, where you know, you really have penalties next year where you can't get any of the big fish for a whole year. So it makes a lot of sense for the Reds.
And at a charity event today, Eddie Romero, the director of international scouting, and Romero was among those in attendance at a showcase for Moncada, and said he was very, very impressed by what he saw. So we will see how this develops. We'll keep an eye on it here at Sox Prospects, so keep an eye on the news page and on the forums as well are also a good place to get information. Thanks for the email as well to Brian. Our next email comes from Mike at BC, and we'll answer this one quickly because we've touched on this guy in the past, but Mike asks, what happened to Jose Venecio? I know he was skinny and still is, but I remember Kevin Goldstein gushing about him a couple years ago, and I got all excited and don't know what happened. I hate when I get all excited and don't know what happened.
The worst.
Thanks, Mike at BC. Well, Mike at BC, it's funny you ask, because Venecio was another one of the players who was eligible to be protected, or will be eligible to be taken in the Rule 5 draft, but there is no chance of that happening. Jose Venecio, kind of an odd situation where, you know, he was a guy who was given $2 million as a 16-year-old out of the Dominican Republic. I know there was at least one spring training where I got all excited and didn't know what happened when I watched him play defense. He was great with the glove, even at a younger age, you know, really could flash the leather. But as Mike mentions, definitely very skinny, real thin. Just never really grew.
No. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's really smooth. You know, it's not like he has no skill at the plate, but it's just that he can barely hit it out of the infield, I would say. I mean, not actually, but not too far off.
Well, and it's funny, I did see him this year, and he has developed a little bit of pop at this point. I saw him in Salem, and he did drive one pretty deep at the park in Frederick, which is not a tiny park. You know, and he did have a stretch where he was hitting a little bit this year, but the problem is his body can't stand up to the rigors of a full season. This year, including rehab games, he played 44 games. Last year, he played a career high of 107 games. The year before, he played in 72 games. The body just can't stand up to it. We have him listed at 5'11", 160. That's probably still what he is, even if that was his numbers when he signed, frankly. You know, and it's just a matter of the body just can't hold up. You know, and the numbers are even a little misleading, because I noticed during his hit streak that he had, or it wasn't a hit streak, but it was a stretch where he was starting to string some multiple hit games together, he's trying to bunt for a lot of hits, and he's just not really, he's not particularly speedy is the other problem. You know, he's not an 80 runner by any stretch. The tools just really aren't there without the size to give him the athleticism to tap into them, really, I think. Just really not a guy for me at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't have much to add. He's just not progressing. I didn't actually realize that he'd gotten that few games last year, but I mean, that's another thing to look at. But it's not like he's killed it when he's been playing either. So it's just, you know, he spent, what, 2 or 3 years in Greenville and then finally got up to Salem, but didn't really even necessarily you know, hit his way into that situation. He just kind of had to change scenery. So, no, I mean, he's pretty much fallen off the prospect charts, unfortunately.
Yeah, he spent 2 years in Greenville. And then last year, he basically got pushed up to Salem by virtue of the fact that they needed to make room for Su-Wei Lin in Greenville. So, you know, on our roster projections, we have him returning to Salem. I find it very hard to push him up to shortstop in Portland at this stage of the game. And we have him on the bench behind Su-Wei Lin, who's another high-bonus, good-fielding, no-stick shortstop. So it's just kind of ironic that those two guys who, let's see, Venecio got, I think, he got 1.95 million, so just under 2 million. And Lynn got a 2.05 million signing bonus. So exactly $4 million spent between the two of them on signing bonuses, and it's unclear that there's a major league shortstop in there at all. And meanwhile, you know, you get, what did they give Bogarts? 450?
Right. Yeah.
So 510. They
those
gave
two
Bogarts.
Guys are the. Those two shortstops are the sort of poster boys for the all defense no hit guys they were signing. They went through a phase of signing a lot of those type guys to the Red Sox and sort of got a bad rep in the forums.
Yes. The posters were angry.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just not a guy at this point. And that's what happens. That's why they're prospects. They're lottery tickets, man. You know, every now, hey, if you say take those two plus Devin Marrero and you're hoping you're going to get a major league shortstop out of one of them, that's what they're going to get. And it's going to be Marrero.
Yeah, I mean, you sign some smooth 16-year-olds basically. They you know, they look athletic, they look smooth in the field, and you project the other things to grow, and they just, you know, didn't, unfortunately, for those two at least.
It's hard to project a guy at 16 to not grow. You know, there's no reason to believe he's not going to put weight on. I was researching Ruby De La Rosa the other day, and apparently when he got to the States, he was like 130 or something after he was signed out of the Dominican. So, you know, that was part of why he suddenly just added a ton of miles per hour on the fastball to now where he's up at 205. That's what happens. These guys come and they get on a better diet and they add weight. But sometimes it just doesn't take, and it looks like that's what happened with Vinicio. Again, thank you for the email, Mike. We appreciate it. And as again, everyone, we love getting your emails, podcast@soxprospects.com. And I think at that point, we'll wrap things up. This was going to be a nice, quick podcast, but now we're over 50 minutes. So nice full episode that we've churned out here. Yeah, that's always what happens. But Matt, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yep, good time.
And thank you, everyone, for downloading. Again, rate and review really helps. And we want to thank you for listening. And until next time, we'll talk to you down the road.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.